you can see Tesla starting to lose these people who want to believe in them. And it's because they didn't grow up dreaming of being a shepherd for a flock of cars that they, you know, that other people are riding in. Like, that's not that, that appeals to crypto hustlers and certain kinds of, you know, tech guys who are on the hustle. But
hello and welcome to the Autonicast. As always, I'm Alex Roy, the founder of the Human Driving Association, the co-founder of Johnson & Roy Advisors, the finest advisory firm in transportation, AI, and robotics. But most importantly, I'm also the co-founder and general partner at New Industry Venture Capital. I'm going to stop there because I don't want to seem like I'm shilling for my projects. How about you?
I'm Ed Niedermeyer. I'm the author of Ludicrous, the Unvarnished Story of Tesla Motors, and I've done literally nothing else with my life. So I do not have a long string of accomplishments to list like Alex. But
well, wait a second. I want to tell you, like, recently I went back to New York to visit for a few days, and I went back to a nightclub in which I wrote if not the first investor check, it was one of the earliest, The Box. To any listeners who've, you know, ever heard about the legendary Studio 54 and missed that, I recommend going to The Box in New York. I'm not involved anymore, but let me tell you, I think that place, when it's shut down someday, is going to be remembered. Did I take you there, Ed?
No, you took me to like the underground basement one, or it was sort of like it was like the Russian theme one.
Yeah, that was Pravda.
Pravda, that's
a different venue I was involved in back in the day. I'm really dating myself now, but I don't go to those places anymore except as a tourist. Hey, Kirsten's not joining us today, so we're going to do a shorter news episode, but I just want to talk about something Riley Brennan said back in the day in his newsletter. He said, who is going to build the F-150 of micromobility? And thanks to you, Ed, I bought a couple of these things from electric bikes from Levi Conlow, who was on the show back in the day, from Electric Bike. That's Lectric. So I've owned these for a while, and I have the X Peak model, which is like the off-road one. And this is the first micromobility. Well, this is the first two-wheeled vehicle I've ever owned. I'm like, I think it could be that. I beat the absolute crap out of this thing, and I love it. $1,300, 30 miles an hour, like 55, 60 miles range. This thing is the greatest vehicle I've ever owned. Ever.
I feel like this is, it's, there's actually an interesting thing. There's a lot that's very different about micromobility and autonomous vehicles. But I do think that one of the things that really unites those two technologies is like they both have a lot of potential. I think there's a lot of things that people would like about both of them. But that potential and the experience is really hard to understand and communicate unless you just experience. There's like no substitute in both cases for experiencing it. And like with AVs, it's actually easier in a way because you just have to ride it once. And like all of this sort of psychological turmoil that people have about these vehicles kind of tends to just like go away very quickly once they agree to just do it. With e-bikes, it's a little different. I think it's like a month is sort of like the minimum that you have to live with it for a while. But once you do, it's like, you will never be like the whole thing. Cause the main thing with e-bikes is like people just look at it and they're like, that's so expensive. I would never pay that much money for a bike. And I swear to you, if you spend a month with an e-bike, you will never think that again. You get it. It's like, yeah, that money, yes, it's more money than you would ever spend on a bike, but you understand the value that you get for it is so much more than a bike that it actually pencils out really, really well.
So let me throw a counterfactual at you. What makes this Electric X Peak so amazing is that it is not connected. It's not connected. It is not pretty. It's not. They don't even pretend to be. It's not shared. It's mine. I'm not sharing. I don't want to share it. It's mine. It's on my patio. It's mine. And it's, well, I mean, it's not autonomous, not self-balancing. It's a bicycle, and it does exactly what I want it to do and nothing else. And so, you know, I was looking at other bikes and, you know, the girlfriend was like, oh, I like a prettier bike. You want a prettier bike? I don't want a prettier bike. The prettier bikes are a lot more expensive and do nothing else for me. Yeah. I love this thing. In fact, I don't even clean it. It's covered in dirt and mud. This is go to electric the bike. Just go look up electric bikes. They have the same model in a commuter version they just released, which is like skinnier tires with more and more range. Whatever. I could not love this thing more. Props. And it's an American company.
You should listen to the go back and listen to the episode. I'm not sure what number it is offhand that we had Levi Conlow on, but I think one of the interesting, you know, things that a lot of companies fell into the trap of is, you know, okay, so you're selling someone a bike that costs way more than a bike should cost. So that kind of nudged, I think, a lot of companies towards that kind of premium model. And so you had like the Van Moofs and whatever, trying to make the Tesla of e-bikes where it's connected and all this, you know, all these bells and whistles, which, you know, again, like for some people who want the latest, coolest toy, like that's wrong. One thing.
Yeah,
but
wrong.
I think what was really fascinating, and I heard Levi Conlow talk at the Micromobility conference, and then we had him on the show, and like what really stood out was like he got it that like this isn't just a premium bike. That's the wrong way to think about this segment. This is a car or a motorcycle or something like that that's been stripped down to its basics. So it's actually very, so he has this very like kind of Henry Ford Model T approach to it, which absolutely. I think, and if you look at how that business is doing compared to a lot of other businesses in the space, I think that's ended up being the right one.
So that episode is episode 293 from November 24th, 2023. And he has a lot of other models, which are nicer and fancier, have better X, Y, and Z. Whatever. I endorse them all. I love seeing them around.
I mean, if you're making it work in Phoenix, Phoenix is not like the kind of place where I imagine like biking around on it. Well, if you're making it work there, like you can make it anywhere.
Well, what's interesting about Phoenix is that, you know, I live right off the canal in Scottsdale, right by Old Town Scottsdale. And so I could ride my bike to the canal. It's, you know, a couple hundred feet. And then off by following the canal, I can cross like half the city. And there are routes all over an area called McCormick Ranch, which is near me, where you can bike without crossing a road extensively. There are communities where people only walk and bike and never cross a road. Some of them are gated, some are not. And so there's like a second world of Phoenix around biking that is just not apparent. It's not well marketed. Like as when you move to the city, like I didn't know about it. You had to go to a bike shop and ask. And the e-bike shops that are newer are not necessarily populated by people who are even like aware of this, because the e-bike shops that are new often have just a young, groovy, good-looking staff. The exception, the real e-bike shop, of course, is the one down at Cul-de-Sac, Ryan Johnson's project. They've got a bike shop on there full of experts, and I love that thing too. It's just, I need a parking spot. Anyway, so moving on.
Yeah. So when you're not e-biking around Phoenix, I mean, you're living the modern Autonicast lifestyle, because when you're not e-biking around Phoenix, you're taking Waymos, right?
I'm taking Waymos. I'm also driving your favorite car, my 2024 Tesla Model S.
Okay. So there's some hits and some misses.
You want an update? All right. So the Waymos are flawless. Take them out. And they expanded the fence across the city. They go almost everywhere I want to go. The only place they don't go is where my daughter Coco goes to school, which is just outside the boundary.
Ooh.
But the Waymo's becoming it's becoming very, very good. I mean, it's great as just a technology, but it's eaten into some of my car rides now, which brings me to my Tesla Model S. You want to hear the latest update?
Okay. Listen, I love hearing about all the problems you have with your Tesla.
I can't believe I've become the guy who like. I love my Tesla, but okay. So, car's got 2,200 miles on it.
Wow,
it's a couple months now. I'm just kidding. And every time I drive it, I can't stop thinking, boy, that Lucid rode so much so nicely. Okay, look. So back in the day when we had Peter Rawlinson on the podcast from Lucid CEO, he was talking about how if your suspension is really, really great, you don't need an air suspension to be comfortable. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, I'm sure that's just, it's just words. He's just using words. He was actually saying something true. The Lucid without an air suspension does ride more comfortably than my Tesla Model S with an air suspension. Secondly, I have developed two noises in the car when I one of them is from the right side, the right front passenger door. And the other one is hard to diagnose. It's somewhere from in the rear of the vehicle, and they're a kind of a buzz. And I've looked, and so I've tried hitting the door hard, like from the inside, just pushing. I looked it up and there's some people on Reddit talking about it.
Hold on. Is this a seasonal? Is your car haunted? Is your Tesla haunted?
No. It's definitely better made than Model S's I bought previously. And it's a fantastic car in every way. But They haven't solved this. But, so the great news,
the nose quality in the 70s has really come along since the 50s.
But listen, the car is a fantastic product, and I would rather own it than almost anything else on the road. Mm. Now, let me say that the amazing thing about Tesla and living here and being me is that when you have a problem with your Tesla, there's someone you can go to for help. And it's Russell Varone, formerly head of General Assembly at Tesla, is my friend. He lives here. And tonight we're going to the Opeth concert. And he said, oh, bring your car to my house. Whatever it is, I can diagnose it and solve it myself. I've got tools. So it's going to be fine.
So if, as long as you're friends with a former head of manufacturing for Tesla, you'll be all right.
The guy knows construction.
It's a scalable market.
Yeah, he knows what he's doing, and he swears he still likes Elon. He doesn't work for Elon anymore. And he likes Elon. The thing about this is just so interesting. Is I took out my 1987 Porsche 911 the other day, the Targa, which is the second most suboptimal design they ever made, other than the Cabriolet itself.
But also the most reliable car you own.
It is 155,000 miles, and this thing does not have a squeaker rattle. This thing is that people knock on Porsche. You know, like the Tesla fans knock on Porsche, but the 1987 Porsche.
It's like, your 80s Porsche. Then it's the Morgan three-wheeler, and then it's your Tesla.
No, to be fair, the Tesla is built better than the Morgan three-wheeler.
Whoa.
Because I'm unable to find a mechanic in Phoenix who can work in the Morgan.
You're not friends with a former Morgan executive who can take care of you.
Well, to be fair, I did go the OTTO Car Club is like the nicest car club in the city, and I was a member. And Eli Kogan's an old friend of mine, and that got me the privilege of getting the Morgan into their garage. But they didn't want to take it back a second time to work on it, and so the Morgan is lower ranked than the Tesla. Mm. And the Citroen SM, which I used to own, the 73, is slightly better than the Tesla because there is a network of mechanics, third-party mechanics, who can work on it.
Yeah, probably much nicer ride.
I put the Citroen SM right next to the Lucid. The Lucid handles better.
I remember going to a 24-hour of Le Mans race, and they just had like one of the benches from the back seat of a Citroen. I think it was an SM, and it was just like – it was like the nicest sofa I'd ever sat in.
Yeah. So, all right, let's move on from this topic.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. Well, let's stick to Tesla though, because we got some Tesla stuff to discuss. I mean,
okay.
So Waymo, and just to kind of, I like this, the counterpoint here, Waymo just closed a $5.6 billion round. I mean, we'd sort of heard about this already. They're doing 100,000, paid driverless rides every week. Meanwhile, our pals at Tesla, their driving automation technology adventure is going a little bit differently. We had the We Robot event. You and I discussed that already, but then there was Tesla's earnings call just more recently that kind of touched on some of the issues that I think Elon tried to skip over in that We Robot event. But let's hash them out, shall we? Which one should we start with?
I've done a lot of talking. You can go first. Although I know, but you're like the Mad Libs of Tesla commentary. Okay.
No, let's start with you. So you wrote like a LinkedIn post and stuff, I think about like California and the sort of A/B testing.
Well, my post was, how is Tesla testing, driverless operations or a future robotaxi service in California if they don't have a permit? And maybe I didn't do enough research into this before I posted, but go ahead, Ed, explain to me what permit they have.
Yeah. So, I mean, the call was confusing, right? So when Musk started talking about this, it was super confusing, because he almost sort of said like he almost said we don't have a permit. Like, I don't think he maybe realizes that they have a California permit for autonomous testing. So okay, and it's not surprising that he's confused because fundamentally Tesla has been playing this game all along where they just say our cars are level two. These are driver assistance systems. These are not. They don't follow the J3018 guidance, which is if you're planning on developing an autonomous system and that's just not mature yet, you have to call it an in development autonomous system, which is then puts you under the purview of these permitting. And so they've been evading the whole permitting structure, even though they have a permit, which allows them to test with the driver behind the wheel. The critical pieces, so they've had that permit for some time, as Elon sort of pungently put it on the call. It's just filling out a bunch of paperwork. Like you said, it's just filling out a lot of forms.
Don't bet against this man. Go on.
I'm not betting against. I've never money and betting has not entered into this. The thing that Tesla has not done or has barely done in the first year or so that they had one of these permits, and I'd have to go back and look. It's probably 2017, 18, somewhere around there. They did what you're supposed to do if you're doing autonomous testing in the state of California, which is log the amount of miles that you drove autonomously and log the disengagements that you did. Now, we've talked about those disengagement reports on the show a lot, and for the most part, Tesla has not entered into them because when they have done them, it's literally been just to record like the Paint It Black video and other kind of promotional things. Those are the only times they say that they're doing autonomous testing. So yes, they've been doing this end run around it. Now they're talking about they're actually doing it. So they do have the permit technically. The thing is that by the end of this year, they're going to have to file that disengagement report with the state of California. So by February sometime, that should become publicly available. And I think the reason Tesla's been avoiding doing that is simply because they don't want to, the comparison is just not going to look good compared to those other companies, right? And so I think that's, so yeah, so they do, my understanding, they do have the permit to do this testing, but if they are deciding that now this is autonomous testing on public roads, they have to log those disengagements and miles.
Okay. So what you're saying is they have the permit they need.
To do the kind of internal only test, right? They're saying it's just employees getting rides from each other and it's autonomous. So the question to me though, right, that what this all brings up is like, what can Tesla go into either a regulatory hearing or court and use to explain the difference between their employees being out there using level 2 driver assistance systems and their employees being out there doing autonomous testing? How do they as a company internally justify this is the one and this is the other? Because the whole thing is a cynical end run around the regulations. I don't think there's any consistent, defensible way that they can actually claim to be making that distinction. Mm. And I think the California DMV has been insanely lax about this whole thing. And now that they're saying, oh, we're doing autonomous testing, I think – at long last, it should have happened. Something should have happened a long time ago. But like, this really should be the point where the California DMV says, listen, like, you've been doing it and run around this stuff. If you're going to like pretend that that didn't happen and take it seriously now, like, we are going to be, you know, I don't know, like that, like something has to be resolved here because it hasn't been resolved.
So didn't Phil Koopman come up with a structure or new levels, like one of there'd be like an autonomy testing level, and that went, he was ignored. Is that,
yeah, really the fundamental problem is that like our entire, like to the extent that there is a regulatory system at the state and the federal levels, you know, and there's all this confusion because, you know, cars are regulated, vehicles are regulated at the federal level, drivers are regulated at the state level. How you sort of sort that out is this big unresolved thing, which by the way, now Tesla is talking about on the call, which is hilarious because the industry has been trying to do like federal preemption and federal approval for years and Tesla hasn't been part of it. Now Tesla's like, hey guys, you want to help us out with this? And that's pretty funny, but
that's called narrative command, Edward.
It's the line between narrative command and just chutzpah is becoming increasingly vague to me. Well
there's narrative command and there's reality command. Okay. And the lines must cross eventually. Do you think that the reality command, do you think that that, let's be serious here. Do you deny that Tesla will eventually launch a robotaxi service with hardware 4 or 5?
I think that betting against Tesla delivering anything actually self-driving is a pretty easy bad bet to justify
Listen, I'm on the opposite side of that. Because let's be clear, okay? Let's be really clear here. Waymo's work today, they're terrific, and I feel comfortable with their safety claims. And I think that culture and the next generation of pastors, like my daughter, is just gonna intersect with Waymo. My daughter already thinks Waymo is normal, but eventually Tesla is gonna release something.
What gives you that confidence?
You're not gonna like the answer.
What tangible evidence?
You're not, You're not going to like this answer, okay? Because I think if you're willing to make some sacrifices on safety, speed, and performance, and you're willing to be very patient, you wait enough years, and they're going to put something into the market. Now, here's the
If you live on the Warner Brothers studio lot, they already have.
Here's my prediction. Okay, let's call it 5 years from now. There's going to be some kind of Tesla deployment. There's going to be a driverless service. However, because of the technical constraints, like just the sensors they've got in the cars today, like even my Tesla, they're just not going to be capable of the levels of safety and performance that a Waymo is today.
But
here's the third dimension, okay, is that if a generation of kids today, like my daughter, already believe driverless is cool, Coco loves Waymo, so do I, but elsewhere in that generation, they've bought the narrative, this narrative command that that Elon is putting into the general pop culture, Tesla, that eventually whatever they release will intersect with a generation of kids who just believe it's good.
Okay, here's my counter to that. Yeah. Okay, good.
Or let me say, that generation of kids, my daughter, she's turning 6. By the time she turns 10 or 12, there'll be Tesla drivers in the market. And it will be, I'm quite sure, technically limited, or it will be at a technical deficit to Waymo by that time. And there'll probably be some delta of safety that Waymo, because Waymo is always moving forward, and they're going to continue to move forward on safety and capability. And Tesla is behind. Even if they deploy, I think they'll be behind for a long time,
given
the sensor constraints.
But here's my counter to this, because I think you make a cogent argument, actually. Well, parts of it. the faith that they're going to deliver, I disagree with. But the narrative command piece, I think you have a strong point. Here's what I would argue, though, is that the narrative command that Tesla exercises in this space is 100%, but like almost 100% rooted in the idea of self-driving cars. It's that they're selling self-driving cars. And if you look at the reaction to this robotaxi thing, I mean, again, they're still trying to navigate the delta between the reality that this technology kind of only works as robotaxis and the narrative command being rooted in selling self-driving cars, right? And so now the pitch is like, it's not, it used to be buy a car, it's your car, it'll go out and work for you when you're not working. Now it's like, you're going to buy a bunch of these cyber cabs and you're going to be like the shepherd of them, right? And it's sort of this like small business owner sort of dream. The point is that all of those visions that they sell, they all have at least one foot solidly in the realm of public or private ownership of this is a vehicle that you buy and you own. And so I think robotaxis are orthogonal to Tesla's narrative command and therefore do not advance it at all. The only way that they can continue to capitalize and develop on their narrative command is through the framework of this. Because if you think about it, in terms of the product, it's not just narrative. They're the only people selling that idea. And I think that's why it's so – that's where the command comes from, is that it taps into this vision that everyone – it's like I've been saying, it matches the mental model. It's not technically plausible, but it matches the mental model people have for this technology. And as soon as they get out of that into robotaxi – and I'll tell you, I was watching Marcus Brownlee and some other folks on some podcast.
I saw that.
Popped up in my YouTube algorithm has been serving up this particular podcast a lot. And it was – I just took a moment to kind of watch it just to kind of – see normies talking about this stuff. And like, what's fascinating is that they clearly want to believe it, right? They're like, Marcus Brownlee has clearly been a big Tesla backer and he wants to believe in this sort of thing. But as it gets away from this, you buy and own this car that then drives itself vision and gets towards robotaxi, you can see Tesla starting to lose these people who want to believe in them. And it's because They didn't grow up dreaming of being a shepherd for a flock of cars that they, you know, that other people are riding in. Like that's not that appeals to crypto hustlers and certain kinds of, you know, tech guys who are on their hustle.
But Turo exists. Turo exists.
But Turo, the reality of Turo and also the fantasy of Turo are not the same, right? Like also a lot of people think that, you know, owning a couple of apartments and being a landlord is a great way to make quote unquote passive income. And the reality is that's actually a lot of work too, to just turn things. Airbnb is a great example. Airbnb has become professionalized over time because the constant grind of turning these things over, of cleaning them, it's unglamorous work that is also hard to just hire people to do cheap and well. And so you've seen Airbnb and all of these shared platforms go from, you know, mom and pop, you know, sort of letting out their car or their apartment that they're not, when they're not using it, to increasingly these, all these platforms are becoming professionalized.
So, look, but nothing you've said just now invalidates the notion that at some point Tesla will deploy something.
But again, there's no evidence for that. It's just, you're just asserting that.
Okay. So, moving on.
Well, hang on. I want to ask you something about hardware 3 real quick.
That's what I want to talk
about. Yeah. Cause I mean, so for years now, people have been saying, experts, and I swear, I just read,
people have been asking, what is Ed going to do with his life if Tesla launches the robotaxi network?
I mean, we'll see. I'm waiting to move on with my life.
That was a low. Okay.
If they prove me wrong, I will absolutely move on with that. So, I mean, for years now, people have been saying Tesla has a software program, Waymo has a hardware program. This has been a software problem, Waymo has a hardware problem. This has been this narrative that gets repeated as if it's God's own gospel carved into stone tablets on Mount Sinai. And here we are. Elon Musk is finally admitting that Hardware 3 probably isn't up to snuff. That essentially, they as they come out with new hardware, they train on that and then sort of try and backport it, but like clearly that doesn't work super well. So if that's true, if Hardware 3 cannot support the level of capability that they think Hardware 4 is, and by the way, let's not take for granted that that means it can actually do safe self-driving. It's just less than whatever Hardware 4 is. That means everybody who's paid for full self-driving between 2016 when it launched and 2020, basically the end of 2022, has been scammed, like inarguably, undeniably.
Okay. One thing at a time. Let me speak on behalf of Waymo, even though I have no professional relationship with them. These morons, these idiots who claim that Waymo can't scale because of the cost of hardware. The cost of hardware has been going down every single year. I remember when I was at Argo, seeing the projections for how costs of hardware would be driven down. And Waymo is driving those costs down every month. And so eventually, they will reach a point of equilibrium where Tesla is. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. So that's just a ridiculous. Waymo doesn't have a hardware problem. They have a hardware plan.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right. Now,
meanwhile, Tesla has a hardware problem that doesn't actually solve their hardware problems. Well, you know, Elon's saying his answer is we can just pop new chips in and that solves the hardware problem that we don't have.
Well, hold on a minute.
Even if they do that, the sensors are still a problem.
That is true. The question is, it's very clear to me, not even a question, it's fact. Will the lowered expectations from the next generation of customers, like my daughter, lead to a point where whatever Tesla deploys is good enough? And especially if the Republicans are elected next week, will we enter a regulatory environment where good enough can be deployed,
so,
as opposed to an environment where if the Democrats are elected, there are more serious regulations and safety metrics required to deploy.
Because, and ongoing criminal investigations, by the way.
However you want to cut it, Tesla can deploy something eventually if expectations are lowered and if culture will allow for a system with, you know, inferior sensors and metrics that don't match what Waymo's putting out today.
Self-driving cars are easy. It's doing it safely. That's the hard part.
By the way, I have to throw this in here. We don't have Kirsten to keep us in check. There's this guy on Twitter named Arnaud Bertrand. And this guy is a full-on tanky. He's a French guy. He sold his software company, whatever he was doing, his travel site. And this guy is a full-on tanky. And every day he's putting out telling stories about how China's ahead, the West is doomed. Last week he was claiming that Chinese AV companies are light years ahead of Western companies. That's just the way it is. And I'm like, well, bro, like, you have any safety metrics behind that? Because no, you don't. And today he's posting about how an eVTOL factory is to build them at scale is now, you know, in play in China. And I love these guys who are just absolutely, they just like, the West sucks. Safety metrics don't matter. China ahead and everything. Because if you don't care about transparency and regulations and safety, of course it's going to be easier to deploy technologies like this.
Yeah, no, I mean, if you have a government environment, a political environment that is really used to like enforcing consensus, then yes, like that, and again, like I think tech people struggle with this idea that driving is a socially defined task, right? Like your ability to drive is not something that you can reduce to, right? We reduce it to a test because humans are sort of have these generalizable skill sets, but like certainly for a computer and for the way machine learning works, it's not like that, right? Like it's you cannot reduce driving holistically to a single set of like tasks or challenges or whatever. It's a socially defined thing. And so if you exist, if you know, in a social context like China, where yeah, like it's not just that the government is good at enforcing and creating, like building consensus and enforcing it, but then like, yeah, like when, you know, if they want to build trust in local autonomous vehicle companies, then they can control the flow of information, which then forces people to trust because they don't hear about any of the bad things that are happening.
But remember, in communist China, government trusts you.
I think this is a really important thing. You know, you mentioned the election, Alex, and I think that like clearly we're at a moment where a lot of people in Silicon Valley and in our sort of tech elite are really find the appeal of authoritarianism, I think.
Let's not get political. It's not a
political
show.
Well, no, I will get political. It is political, Alex. Okay. This matters. It is directly related to this technology. What I would argue is that those are people who are self-interested. They're not really interested in what makes for a good and vibrant technology ecosystem. They want to preserve their own status within that ecosystem, even at the detriment of that system. And I will tell you, I think the counter message that people need to like, I think, lean into more is, you know, the openness of American culture in contrast to a place like China is a strength in this area. The higher bar that we as a society set, and again, like there's constant argument like, no, we need to lower the bar for these vehicles so that we don't fall behind. And like, that's a super, right, that like regulation stands in the way of innovation. Actually, high social standards for both, not only for the level of safety, but more importantly, for the level of transparency around letting the public know when bad things happen and don't try and hide it and don't try and sugarcoat it. That creates, it's like a healthy competitive market that forces these companies to achieve at a high level and not cut their standards and use sort of like control of information or government corruption or other things to make what they're doing look better. So I think, you know, we're at a point where America as a technology ecosystem, as well as a democracy, by the way, you know, need to really be real about what actually makes us stronger and what makes us weaker. And I think authoritarianism and control of, and I think autonomous vehicles are a great lens to look at this, because I think if you were to put China's best up against Waymo, which is America's best right now, I think we would beat them handily. And I think that is in large part because Waymo has had to live up to the higher standard of transparency and safety that we have in this country.
I mean, had Argo survived, I hoped that Argo would have set the bar for this. Argo's gone, so Waymo is setting the bar. And for sure, what Brian Slutsky said is true. Some amount of regulation, a reasonable amount, is what we need.
But it's not just regulation. It's also, again, I think the having an open culture, right? Where you, when bad things happen, that's part of the deal. You know, earning public trust means when you make a mistake, you are transparent about it.
Yeah, of
and
course.
Again, this is one of my biggest beefs with Tesla, is that for 8 years, eternally optimistic, right? But the fact that at no point in the last 8 years that Elon Musk has said, okay, like this is silly. He makes jokes about himself on stage now and about his optimism. He has never stopped and been like, you know what? Listen, like this is ridiculous. I've been so wrong so many times here. Here's sort of why. Here's what I missed. Here's what I get now. There's no effort to be accountable to himself. And I think that that as a technology, like for technology in particular to move in that direction is really dangerous for everybody.
And if you'd like to learn more about this, Edward Niedermeyer's book is Ludicrous, The Unvarnished Story of Tesla Motors, and the next book on Tesla is coming out soon. Okay. one question, if you could please answer this in 15 seconds or less.
Yeah.
Tesla Hardware 3, which will not run FSD by Elon's own admission, yes or no? Is Tesla going to replace the hardware with Hardware 4? Yes or no?
Sure. They're going to try. Yeah, sure.
Okay, great. Great. So
it won't solve their problem.
Great. Which brings us to Tesla's narrative command. So a few weeks ago when Tesla had the Wii robot event and even fans snickered, a few days after that, Tesla announced earnings and they knocked out of the park and the stock rallied 20%. 15 seconds. What do you think?
I think the market's expectation was that they were going to do quite poorly. They exceeded that expectation. I think Tesla's I did a long, you can find me on Blue Sky at Niedermeyer.io. I did a very long thread about that call. I think it was super unconvincing. I don't know how anyone listens to this stuff and feels like Tesla's on the right track. But they performed relative expectations. I think you brought up the point earlier that really right now Tesla, like as an investment and as a company, I've watched it for a very long time. It's incredibly frustrating that it seems to all be coming down to one election, but it really does. I think that this election is the most important tipping point in Tesla's history, having watched it for a long time.
When I was writing the Narrative Command piece last month, I was talking to Patrick Hunt, my partner on the fund, and he said, look, we need to calculate the value of that narrative, of the robotaxi narrative. And the number we came up was somewhere around $140 to $150 billion. So I'd like to know is what is Waymo's value? Because for Waymo has Reality Command. They're scaling right now. What do you think Waymo's valuation? I mean, if Tesla gets $150 billion for robotaxi narrative, Waymo should get no less than $150 billion for reality.
So first of all, I would say your estimate is really conservative. At the point that Elon Musk himself says that Tesla's worth basically nothing if they don't self-driving.
That's the entire company.
That's $700 billion. No, and honestly, I mean, there is value in the underlying car company, the supercharger network and things like that. But like that value is trapped under fraud, under all kinds of legal overhang, regulatory overhang, you know, all kinds of issues that like, you know, a car company probably doesn't want that Fremont factory. There's all kinds of things about Tesla that make its core value, like even at 2 million units, hard to define, right? So I would say as a percentage of Tesla's $700 billion valuation, I would say full self-driving and the prospect that they're going to create a general solution of camera only level 5 full self-driving, that is at least half of their valuation.
Okay. So Waymo's value today by your estimate is,
but the problem is that Waymo, no, because Waymo is not selling the fantasy, right? So Tesla is a slugging average bet, right? It's essentially taking venture capital into public markets. I think the best informed investors in Tesla see it as a low likelihood of coming true, but a big payoff if it does.
Is this what your new book's about?
It's like a levered bet. I mean, this is absolutely a big part of what my book is about. Yeah.
I you know, all hearing you talk just makes me just quadruple down on my thesis, which is that Wave, Mobileye, and Tesla are as a group are in a race with Waymo. Waymo brings those hardware costs down such that and the hardware form factors can go down to passenger cars acceptability, like design wise, like what Luminar did with the conformal LiDAR. Then that's the future.
No, but the problem with that is that it's not just cost. There's also a whole lot of calibration issues and
things like
that. They're solvable, but these are problems that will take time. You know, cars are already as expensive as they've ever been. You know, the average transaction prices are already really high. We're already starting to see after just the absolute boom of the COVID era, you know, cyclicality is going to set in. We haven't had a real down cycle in auto since 2008. And there's a lot of evidence that we're moving more towards one, as well as a broader economic. The idea that, you know, we are really, you know, even 10 years away from Waymo level of performance in a car that you can sell at any kind of scale is, I think, 10 years is right. If this was more of a prospect, Waymo would be talking about it more, because again, fantasy. What investors are, and again, this is why the narrative command thing depends entirely on this private use case thing. And so I, you know, that's why I think it does.
Maybe we should do a narrative command debate.
I think we should.
On another format. Yeah. All right. Because remember, Krafchik said, John Krafchik, former CEO of Waymo, did come on this show back in the day and say that he envisioned different future business models.
And he talked about leasing. He did not talk about owning. He talked about leasing. And even that was very – and he said at the time – as I recall, I'd have to go back and listen.
I'm going to text Krafchik, get Krafchik back on the show.
He said at the time, though, that this calibration issue and stuff is one of the things. Is that right? Like, it's not just every time the Waymo goes back to its depot, it's not just recharging, it's not just being cleaned, but all of these sensors have to be precisely calibrated in order to achieve the level of reliability and certainty that it takes to take the driver out of the wheel.
Sounds like your new book is just going to be amazing. I have no idea what it's going to say. Well, I could not predict the outcome. Look, I got a lot of feedback, great feedback about our last episode about the Comma AI cross-country drive. Incredible. Mm. People love that. Jay Roberts, thanks for coming on the show. Now, but one of the questions I got over and over and over was, what, you know, when is there going to be a driverless Cannonball record? Because it requires the fence is just the 8A in New York and B in the other side. The fence is the interstates all the way.
So you just validate the route.
I'm pitching you now, because I think I'd like to ask Waymo if they want to do this. Wouldn't the greatest Hail Mary if Waymo wanted to take narrative command from Tesla? Then shouldn't they put me in a Waymo in New York City and let me ride that Waymo to LA? Wouldn't that be the absolute, like, kick in the shin, punch in the face, ice pick in the eye move for Waymo to absolutely annihilate Tesla's narrative on AV?
Two things on this. One is, I think the idea of a driverless Cannonball is a really interesting, provocative one, because it's risky. And that's always been the part. It would be risky. You've done enough Cannonball runs There's unpredictable stuff that happens every time.
Yeah, but 55 miles an hour the whole way is, I believe, well within the capabilities of a Waymo.
I mean, yeah, sure.
Based on what I've seen.
But even that, I mean, it would be a very difficult thing to. We also don't know what the Waymo, like, how much range does a Waymo have operating fully autonomously?
Well, it would have to stop the charge.
Look, could you even make it charger to charger? I don't want to cast aspersions.
This is an open call to Dmitry Dolgov and to Kedra, co-CEOs of Waymo, and John Krafchik, all of you and all our friends. You know what to do.
I want this for you so badly, but I'm telling you, it won't happen because it would intrinsically be dangerous, which again is part of the Cannonball thing. Wait. It's part of the tradition.
You think going 55 miles an hour. But it's
why a company that is serious about earning the public's trust is not going to do it. Hmm. And there's one other point on this that I think is really important to make, because you know, you're framing this as they need to do something like this to kick back at Tesla.
I don't think they do.
And I'll tell you why. Waymo is the original company in this space. They've been doing it since day one.
I ride more Waymos than you do.
I know. They've looked at selling a level two system on privately owned cars. They've looked at that before. One of the things that really bothers me about discourse around this technology right now is this, right? Tesla, Waymo is succeeding at level four.
Mm-hmm.
And the only ones, decades now almost of superhuman work by the brightest people in the world, right? They're finally, level four is becoming real. I think it's incredibly stupid and frankly disrespectful for people to just assume that there must be a cheaper, more scalable way of doing this, that Waymo is just too stupid or uncreative or not risk tolerant enough to take. This is an article of faith that there is this other way of doing things, because right now no one has proven that you actually can get to a level of safety that is anywhere comparable to go driverless the way Waymo is doing. It is, and again, I understand in theory why people do it. I also understand that, you know, if you spend your whole life developing machine vision, you know, or computer vision stuff, that you really want to believe that that's the one singular secret to like solving this problem in this way that, and again, the capital markets are encouraging this because they're kind of degenerate gamblers, and rather than taking a low risk but limited upside approach that Waymo is doing, and by limited upside, I mean, to some extent it's limited.
Okay, and I'm going to cut you off here because
it's curious not here to do it.
I'm with you. And what I would like for Waymo is for them to command the space that reality occupies, because they've earned it. And that's what I want for Waymo.
I agree. I just don't think driving across the country does that. If anything, it normalizes and validates that there is an alternative. And the reality is that all you have to do is look at what's happening. 100,000 driverless rides every week.
I'm going to take a Waymo right after this.
Because you're saying that you know, that it's just a matter of time before Tesla is able to somehow, even if it's unsafely,
I guarantee you.
And I don't think there's any real evidence for that.
I guarantee you that if Waymo doesn't do this, that at some point Tesla will probably unsafely do it.
I think it'll happen.
And that would really break my heart, because I'm rooting for the good guys, which is whomever is doing this the safe way or the safest way possible, which is Waymo's way.
The first driverless cannonball will be a lot like every other cannonball, in that it will be well-off guys who love the challenge and want to throw money at it.
Most of the cannonballers are not well-off guys. If you look at if you came to the reunion, these guys are very, a lot of them are very blue collar, working class, middle class guys.
Alex, you gotta be.
I'm the outlier.
Okay. I'm not saying they're super wealthy, but I'm saying like it's going to be an individual. I don't think if you're a serious company in this space, you know, and this is, so my pitch on this was is racing. I feel like autonomous racing could be so great, because you could have it all be sort of on the edge of control, and you could have these big crazy crashes and no one would be at risk. Like, for me, autonomous racing should be a crazy wreck fest. But the problem is that no company is gonna sponsor it, because that's the exact opposite of the image they want to create.
We need a whole other show.
Same problem here with
we need a whole other show to correct you on these assumptions. All right.
we need to
wrap this up.
All right.
However, one last thing. Did you hear that the city of Palo Alto is trying to talk to Tesla about partnering for robotaxis?
Yeah, you know, the city of Palo Alto should be paying more attention to the like green chemicals that are literally running out of Tesla's like former headquarters in Palo Alto down the gutters of their nice California like rich person enclave. I would pay attention to that before I even began talking about letting them have their fake movie studio lot robotaxis on your public roads.
And let's just a shout out to Wave, who was on the show a few weeks ago, who've expanded their testing to the state of California. But at the same time, I have to say something. It's not about Wave, but I'm going to say something negative here. A lot of the stories about what Wave is doing was talking about L2 plus testing. If you are putting L2 plus in your headline, there are two things wrong here. A, you have no idea what you're talking about. And B, you are part of the problem.
Counterpoint, L2 plus is the only way to really describe the cul-de-sac that Tesla's leading everyone down. more pluses forever.
I'm not doing any more shows with
Eight
you without
years
a third
of,
person.
Of adding pluses. Okay.
Is there anything else you want to say on today's episode?
Alex, I want to say have a happy Halloween. And to of our listeners, I hope you all have a happy Halloween as well.
Absolutely. And you know, to the tankies out there who are trying to get on Twitter and tell us about how China's ahead on AV and they're ahead on eVTOL. Okay. Never bet against the United States. Never bet against the United States. Long term, it's a mistake. And with that, I would like to thank our sponsors of the Atomic Cast Party, CS Party 2024, which is coming up. Not all of them have gotten their logos in, so the invites can go out, but I would just like to shout out to the sponsors. And Waymo, not a coincidence for talking about them. We talk about them anyway. But coincidentally, they're also a sponsor of the event. Woven, Mobileye, Roxas, the Michigan Center for Future Mobility, Cognic, Michigan Central, IVEX, In Motion Ventures, Manny Mobility, new sponsor, TD Bank,
all right.
Steer, and Trucks Venture Capital, Riley Brennan. We love all you guys. We'll be shouting you out in more detail in subsequent episodes. And if you would like to attend the Atonicast party, it's almost impossible, but the only way to get in would be to email me, Alex at the Atonicast. Wait, is it?
It's just Atonicast.
Alex at Atonicast.com. Send me your... if you want to come, send me email me, and you may already be on our curated list. And let me also add that we have some special surprises at this year's party, and that the sponsors are aware of that are very cool, that have never been done before, and the party will be unlike every other party at CES. Tasteful, interesting, and absolutely worth flying in for, even if you don't attend anything else. See you next week on the AtomCast.